This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. The UK-based peace and reconciliation think tank Conciliation Resources is calling for a review of peace initiatives in Lebanon. Bordering on Syria and Israel, the country has repeatedly been drawn into regional conflicts and is still recovering from 17 years of a civil war, which formally ended with the Taif Agreement in 1989. Recent clashes in the northern Lebanese city of Tripoli testify as to just how easily a conflict like the one now in Syria can have repercussions on its smaller neighbor. While Conciliation Resources focuses on seven conflict-affected regions around the world, taking an in-depth look at specific conflict and peace-building themes through their Accord serial publications. The latest report in the Accord series, Reconciliation, Reform, and Resilience, Positive Peace for Lebanon, suggests a fundamentally different approach is needed to transform negative and precarious stability in Lebanon into positive and resilient peace. A wide range of representatives from different sectors of Lebanese society, plus experts from outside the country, contributed to the report. Accord editor Alexander Ramsbottom says most of the Accord projects are more than a year and a half in the making, and information for its publication on Lebanon was gathered before an upsurge in Lebanon of violence related to the Syrian conflict. Ramsbottom notes that researchers found that one of the biggest challenges to any sustainable peace in Lebanon is what they call the country's collective amnesia regarding the past.
Certainly that was a viewpoint that we felt was very significant. In fact, we had a whole section of the publication focusing on reconciliation and in particular dealing with the past. And we felt that there were a lot of problems that have carried on from the civil war up to today and a lot of tensions within society which have failed to be dealt with because there hasn't been enough or the right type of focus put on reconciliation at a number of levels, from the local level all the way up to the national level. And a particular blockage to reconciliation going forwards was this very deliberate and quite widespread decision, really, to say, well, we'll forget about what happened in the past and we won't address it and we'll just move on from there. And this is epitomized, I guess, in the Amnesty Law 1991, which very explicitly said that they wouldn't try to address some of the crimes and other things that happened during the war. And meanwhile, there's been no sense of collective, at least at the national level, thinking about, well, what happened, who did what to whom, and how can we try to move on from that and get people to talk to each other and have a dialogue about how they might reconcile some of their differences and their problems and remember some of the things that happened.
Now, it's interesting that you should say that. I've often wondered if a peace and reconciliation commission or a process similar to what was set up after the apartheid era in South Africa would be a viable solution to Lebanon's problems. Did your researchers find that something like that process would be a cathartic exercise for the country?
We didn't make specific recommendations about whether a similar process from, as you mentioned, in South Africa, but also we've seen in other parts of Africa and actually more increasingly across the Middle East today. What we did suggest was that, first off, that there are quite a few civil society efforts to promote memorialization, remembering the past, but also to look at issues of reconciliation. For example, we did a feature on a place called Umam, which is based in Beirut, which has been documenting and collecting people's memories of the war and their experiences of it across a massively wide range of different sectors of society and different people who are involved in different ways, from militia fighters through to villagers and so forth. And so there are a lot of initiatives to try to deal with the past. However, one of the things that we found, or our researchers found rather, was that a lot of these quite often stay within Beirut, and not only within Beirut, at a quite a sort of elite social level within Beirut. They're tied up with the arts and different things that happen on that sort of level, which isn't to criticize that happening. There are amazing things going on. But what they failed to do is reach out to to society as a whole, lower levels of society like that within Beirut, but also across the country. And actually, there are local structures and traditional structures for conflict resolution and different types of activity that happen at a local level, which could be tapped into to spread these types of memorialization across the country and throughout society, which would be a really big catalyst, I think, for reconciliation to take place.
So you say that most of these people are young people working out of Beirut, but they need to spread their efforts more widely across the country. But many of the young people today would not have lived through the 17-year civil war that gripped the country, as you said, up until about 1989. So how can these young people today be engaged more in this dialogue for peace? I mean, were you able to come up with some suggestions of how the people there in Beirut are able to reach out?
Yes, no, we did quite a lot of stuff on youth issues. And I think a starting point for us was the real tragic situation for Lebanon is, as you say, today's youth haven't experienced the war and would hope to be living in a reconciled society that was had moved on somewhere from the war. In fact, that isn't what it looks like really for many Lebanese youth today. They face a lot of challenges, from economic challenges, employment and unemployment, and also social challenges to do with which particular type of group you belong to and what that means for your opportunities. And in fact, today there's, I think, a lot of youth are actually leaving Lebanon, a lot of very qualified youth. They work to get their qualifications and then they look beyond Lebanon to progress in their lives because of the lack of opportunities domestically, which is a real shame and is a real problem. Another problem, or which might be tied to an opportunity for change, is to do with voting rights, because voting rights are still set at the age of 21 in Lebanon. And there have been recommendations from a number of studies and from a number of different areas to bring that down to 18, but that's still quite resisted in many parts of the political system. External pressures like we see at the moment from particularly what's happening in Syria, those have really been recurrent since the end of the civil war, and Lebanon has found itself repeatedly vulnerable to these external challenges. But we were saying that the reason it's so vulnerable is because of internal weakness and the types of cleavage that I've just spoken about.
Lebanon is often characterized as a pawn in a game of regional chess. To what extent is Lebanon responsible for its own fate?
That's a very good question and a very big question for us. We have called this publication Positive Peace for Lebanon, Reconciliation, Reform, and Resilience. And the second part of that, Reconciliation, Reform, and Resilience, refers to social reconciliation between different societal groups within Lebanon, reform of the political system. And then it's really Lebanon's national resilience, and that really refers to its ability to withstand these types of external pressure. So we very much acknowledge the fact that Lebanon is in a difficult regional position and there are very significant external pressures which are undeniable. A key point for us was, however, that it was the domestic situation is the key to progress, and it's Lebanon's internal weakness which is the primary cause for its vulnerability to these external pressures.
I wanted to ask you, religion often seems to get the short end of the stick and is often blamed for many of the world's problems, but can't it be part of the solution, and particularly there in the Middle East?
Well, it exists there anyway, and it's a massive social and political focus for different social groups in the Middle East and in Lebanon in particular. So whether you think it's a part of the problem or a part of the solution, it's not going to go away, so you have to deal with it. Certainly, in a positive sense, we, in our study, we had a section looking at interfaith dialogue within the Lebanese situation, which has transformed over years from a sort of Christian-Muslim dialogue to a sort of Sunni-Shia dialogue with Christians attached to it. So it has morphed quite a bit in the Lebanon situation. But there's certainly a lot happening on the ground in Lebanon to promote interfaith dialogue, which I think can have a very big impact on what's going on. And there's the person we speak to is the Secretary General of the Committee for Islamic Christian Dialogue, Mohammed Samak. And he makes some very specific references to what has happened in the past, what sort of activities they've done, whether interfaith dialogue is becoming more difficult or easier in the current sort of situation, and the types of impact it might be able to have. So there's certainly lots of positive things happening, and there are ways that people are trying to make religion part of the solution, as you suggested, rather than part of the problem. There's always also a dialogue on question of secularization in Lebanon, particularly at the political level, which is a whole other debate, which doesn't necessarily dismiss the idea of religion or the role of religion in society or in relation to the state. But it's important to take all those factors into consideration when you're thinking about these types of issues.
And thanks there to Accord editor Alexander Ramsbottom from Conciliation Resources.